Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horwitz, and well, she's done it again, and we got her, and she's going to tell us what to do. It's our friend from the title group, Taylor Blaisdell. What's up, Taylor?
Well, you know, the market doesn't want to shift, but we're waiting for it to happen. We know where it's going to go, and we're hanging strong here, but all is well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So explain to everybody what you mean by the market doesn't want to shift, because there is some direct meaning, and this is one of the examples. When you're trading and when you're doing things that you learn, you kind of watch for these kind of things because you know something's going to happen. But what are you talking about to everybody out there?
You know, it's a very unique time because pre-QE, when the Fed got involved after 08, 09, you know, the market, you know, shifted in a very, very predictable way. And ever since then, there's been a sort of a bullish twist to the market in terms of, hey, let's not just look at, hey, what the market is going to do, but what do we anticipate the Fed's going to do to move the market? It sounds horrible to say that, and it's really not how traditional open markets should work, and you know that from being on the floor and having been trading in the markets for, you know, over 25 years. It's just not how it works. But the reality is, today, that's how it works. And so our markets in a traditional environment would have shorted this market a while ago, right? But we also know that people are anticipating certain kinds of moves and QE and interest rates, and there's just a bullish bid to the market. I mean, there's no question about it, right? I got a sell signal back in September. The market came off 6%, right? And it happened pretty quickly, but I think on the back of what happened in August, and I did receive another sell signal. I won't say exactly when, but mid-early October, and we haven't seen it, right? We're starting to see somewhat of a breakdown, but at the end of the day, you know, it's really kind of hard to unwind that bullish trade when everybody expects the Fed to walk in and say, hey, don't let the market sell off, like QE4, or, you know, keep interest rates at -0, or, you know, whatever's going to happen. But I think that people just don't believe that the market's going to go down. And I know we saw a big move down in August, and that was jolting, surprising. But at the same time, you know, I think that the market doesn't want to believe it. And then when they do, it's going to be vapid and quickly and highly volatile like it was in August. So it's a really unique time in the market, right? Because people are sort of pricing it, but then when they move out, it's going to be like a vacuum.
Absolutely. Look, you know, you're saying it straight up, and that's what's going on because, again, this is not right now. I would say this is not truly a free market. We are not getting true free market price discovery. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's sort of a skewed, if that makes sense. And I don't mean it in the sort of options trading world, but in just a, I mean, the reality is you've seen it a bit to the market since 09. And all the moves have been vampant and vacuum-like and quick. I could even take a look at that. We can talk about it next week. But, you know, since 09, since 08, there has not been a sustained move down that's longer than, you know, a couple of weeks. So people just don't want to believe that the move we saw down in August and September is sustainable and that it's going to last.
And that,
I disagree, but we're going to see where that goes.
Well, you and I both know that, and we don't know when, we can't predict when, but
right,
we do know,
no.
We both know that when it does go, it's going to be so fast, it's going to be a vacuum, and there's going to be a jump back rally like there always is, but the next time it's not going to make it back, and then it's going to reverse course and start to do the opposite of what it's done for the last 7 years and go straight up, and it's going to go straight down. But there will always be opportunities. And Taylor and I never preach fear or, you know, get out. I mean, Taylor's talking what she does. So let's tell everybody again what you do. Now, I know your signals have been really good. Okay. And I know you've been on top of it. I know. I'll tell you what, one of the things I do love about what you do is that it really doesn't take, you know, a lot. It's like, okay, this is the signal. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm here for this amount of time. And at the end of this amount of time, I'm done. I'm moving on. And whether I add back to it or whatever. And I love that model because it really takes all the emotion out of what you're doing. And tell us about the program again and tell us how we can get involved if we should choose to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I think what everyone needs to keep in mind is that I can tell you a general direction of where I think the market is going, but at the end of the day, the model is long or short, depending on the day, and I might have a bearish sentiment, but I might be long or short in any given day, so you can never take that literally, and because obviously that changes. I have an overall general opinion of the market, but then there's the general signal that's model-driven that I don't deviate from, and you know, obviously our ideal investor is somebody who can take a step back and is just looking for somebody who can capitalize on volatility and understands volatility and can put their money in and doesn't need to sort of micromanage it, if that makes sense. But, you know, it's a very, very difficult market, right? I mean, we're coming off highs in the last 2 to 3 years. People are used to buying an ETF and the market going straight up. Right. And the Fed is guilty of facilitating that market, unfortunately. And unfortunately, I think the outcome of that is going to be not the Fed suffering. Well, they'll suffer in their own right. Right. But the general retail investor is going to suffer because you can't just buy an ETF anymore and expect the market to go up. Right. 2013, up over 15%. 2014, up over, you know, 15% or almost 13% or whatever it was, but not including dividends. But at the end of the day, I do believe the market is shifting. And no matter what the Fed decides to do, I do think you're going to see increased volatility. I mean, seeing volatility in 2013 and 2014 sub 12 and sub 13, that is an anomaly. That is, I mean, you know, being a trader, that the VIX, the average volatility, is somewhere between, you know, 15 and 20, and it's just not realistic, right? And so I think that people need to realize it's not a mom-and-pop market, and they need to invest with advisors and CTA managers that they trust and that they know, understand the market, right? And you, having been in the market and understanding the market and trading, and you know the market, right? You understand what volatility really means, and that, you know, VIX 20 could turn it into VIX 30. You know, I mean, it doesn't always go down, right? And the market doesn't always go up. So I think it's a very unique time in the market. And I think that as volatility continues, it's going to open up a lot of opportunity for managers in general and investors to really meet people who can meet their needs. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not a buy the ETF market anymore. Does that make sense?
I don't think it really ever was. I think that your model, and what I love about your model, is it's pure mathematical. You know, again, I don't know how it's written, but whatever it is, it's got nothing to do with our opinion. It's strictly, this is right. What the model says I have to do, and this is what I'm going to do. I don't care what my personal opinion is. I have to put my personal opinion aside, and I love that. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, as you know, we're on Twitter at Tidal Group, which is @Tidal, TadalGroup.com.
At Tidal Group, right. Okay, then, got that.
And then our website is www.TidalGroup.com, and that'll be live next week.
That's awesome. So make sure you check out what she's talking about, because Taylor understands it well. I mean, we talk through email or text probably 30 times a day. So and it's great. I mean, we're too old. We're two old traders. I'm old. She's not. But we're two old time traders that understand real markets. And really, I urge you to check out the Tidal Group, and that's GRP.com next week, and check out the site and check her out. And again, you'll be free. Feel free to email me any questions that you might have, and I'll relay them or we'll ask them right on air to Taylor. Taylor Blaisdell from the Tidal Group, thank you so much for being here. It's always great to have you on.
Yeah. always happy to be on here, and I will definitely keep you posted.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace will be right back after the Bubba Show.
Mud grips, white tip, cigar sticking out.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it is time for the one, the only, my friend, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and all around great business executive. I think you might get executive of the year this year, my dear. What's going on out there in the world of media in New York?
If I'm ever down in the dumps, I'm going to call you, because I always get this great ego boost whenever I talk to you.
Listen, you're the best. So what's happening in the world of business? Anything exciting we should know about?
Well, earnings. I mean, that's really, you know, been the story. Of course, Walmart, which as soon as these numbers came out and I started looking at them a little bit, I thought about all these conversations that you and I have had, because they basically, you know, the CEO is like, yeah, the economy is okay, and back school sales are pretty good. I mean, not exactly enthusiastic, ringing endorsements. And they, of course, have, you know, a finger on the pulse of the American middle class, lower middle class shoppers. So, and I just, you know, felt like that was what you and I have talked about so much, that there's still a significant amount of people in the United States that are still struggling and can't afford things. Now, they're losing some business to Amazon, so they're part of it. But it's also, I think, just people are watching what they spend.
Well, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, you can talk about Amazon, and everybody likes to chirp up on Amazon how they're knocking Walmart out. But the bottom line is the overall amounts of dollars being spent is less. Maybe the proportion is switched, but people are not spending money. I mean, retail sales have come down almost every quarter since 2011. So why are we surprised? I mean, it's like, to me, it's the same as the asset bubble or the Fed. When this does pop, and again, you know, I'm on the fence that it's a bubble, but it doesn't matter. Why would we be surprised? I mean, here you and I, we talk about it every single week in some version or another of what's going on with the over general economy, and we have a pretty good feel for what's going on because of what you do and what I do and what we both do as well. Why are we so surprised? I don't understand the big surprise. I mean, I wasn't shocked. Were you shocked?
No, I mean, this is, you know, when they came out, maybe the way they did it was wrong, because it seemed like it was such a surprise. They did it like this analyst conference. But I'm not surprised that people are pulling back. I mean, I still think, I mean, the whole financial crisis was 7 years ago, 8 years ago it started. It's still pretty fresh in a lot of people's minds. You know, a lot of people really got burned then, and it changed things for a generation. So I think, you know, people aren't as confident. They don't have that completely optimistic feeling. I feel like that they had before, that, oh, everything's going to be okay. You know, yeah, it'll be a little rough patch, but we'll get through it. You know, we're the United States. But I think that showed us that things can really hit the fan here, too. And I know people, still, you know, they're not getting wage increases. The numbers of temp workers are growing. That UAW contract with Fiat Chrysler, they're going to double the amount of temp workers that they're going to use. That was a way that Fiat Chrysler was able to get the money to give the raises to the full-time people. So we're going to start seeing more of that, the gig economy, just people hiring for projects. I have a lot of friends that work in public relations, and they just get hired for projects. They come and they work for somebody, do a big marketing campaign for 3 to 6 months, and then they're off to their next thing. And I think we're going to be seeing more of that in the future.
Now, I mean, those kind of things are a little scary to me, because we really, in my eyes, with what's happened over the last 7 years, we're really taking away the independent entrepreneurial spirit, but we're really taking away what true markets are about. Because now everybody is so afraid to make a commitment. You know, it's like a relationship. We're afraid to commit because we don't know what's going to happen next. And when you start depending on artificial boosts to help you think you're growing, I think that becomes a bigger problem, don't you?
Well, I think, you know, there's a few things happening. First of all, it's hard to fire people. There's a lot of HR rules about it. It has to be done a certain way. You got to file papers with the state. You have to keep meticulous records. You might get sued, you know, cost money. I mean, there's all these things. So, I think that's one thing. It's that employers are so cautious. I mean, when I got hired at Bloomberg, I went through 5 or 6 interviews before I finally got hired, and they gradually went up until finally I talked to the head of the whole company, Matt Winkler. But it was, it's that kind of thing, much more thorough background checks. So nobody wants to take any risk anymore. Everybody's afraid of lawsuits and so forth. So that's one thing that's happening. And then the other thing that's happening is just companies trying to save money. I mean, they don't want somebody on their books who is only going to be productive half of the year. And so if you've got a marketing project, I'll go back to PR, if you need somebody, to work 50, 60 hours a week for 6 months, then you hire them for that, you pay them for that, and then at the end you shake hands and part ways, and that professional looks for something else. So in a way, it kind of makes people hustle a little bit more for work too. So there's two things going on. It's kind of a dichotomy.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, I've said this from the beginning, the reason that jobs are so bad, and they are bad, I don't care what the numbers come out and say, they're bad. But, what really happened is the higher paying jobs, the better jobs, but what the companies are starting to do is say, look, you want to work for us? Work harder. Okay, that's it. Yeah. If you don't want to work, listen, there's a million people out there. There's a line waiting to replace you. You don't want to work harder? Then we'll get somebody else and goodbye. And they're not adding. See, that's the real problem. They're not adding to their staff. And don't get me wrong. I believe that, years ago we were overpaying people and overstaffed, and you had 75 vice presidents in a company that required one, right?
Right.
But so now we go forward. So what does it look like to you? Again, you've been in the business for a long time and your diverse background because of where you came from and where you are and what you do. What do you think is the end game here? How do we look going forward? I mean, of course, we know we're going to get out of this eventually. But does it happen sooner or later? Is it, are we going to really be in these kind of crazy, manipulated type markets for a while longer?
Oh my goodness! I mean, good question. I mean, it's gone on longer than I would have dreamed, and they keep digging themselves deeper a hole. I mean, that's kind of in a box now. I honestly think that it'll take a crisis before, as long as everything's going swimmingly, there's no riots, there's not an overthrow of the government, there's no crisis, they're just going to keep plugging along. And if it's more stimulus, they've looked at every which way they could possibly do stimulus. Zero interest rates, buying bonds, maybe China's going to do some more stimulus. Well, that will help us, and I think they're all just kind of biding time and maybe hoping that this resolves itself, or it happens in another generation, in which case, it's going to be terrible for those people.
Yeah, and that is very concerning because, again, I just believe in America. I mean, I was on Varney last week and they said, when do you think the world is going to come in? I said, I love the country. I love where we are, but I don't like where we are. From an economic standpoint, I don't like so much Fed manipulation. I don't want to hear from some Fed governor every other day about what they think we should be doing. What I really want is I want to go back to free markets and let the markets decide what interest rates should be and everything else. Do you agree with that or no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's every day, by the way, that, I look at Barron's and that first page that they have and they talk about all the upcoming events this week. Almost every day there is a Fed governor speaking or participating in a roundtable or, giving a speech at the economic club of this city or that city. And so, the trouble is, and this all goes back to, I don't think the average American cares, understands what the Federal Reserve's role is. Why was it even created? Is it even necessary? I mean, nobody even questions that. And, you got Ron Paul, of course, questioning it, but it's not gaining traction. I think just the average American is like, look, I mean, once I have a job and I get a pay raise and I can, pay my mortgage and go out to eat every once in a while, I'm happy. And I think eventually we're not smart. I don't think we're smart about money in this country, and I think that's going to hurt us at some point.
That's 100%, and I do believe there's going to be another revolution at some point. I mean, I don't think it'll be tomorrow, but I think eventually you're creating too many poor people. You're creating too many entitlements. But we got Jane King, and she always puts a smile to our face. So we're always happy when you come on because, again, you do bring great light. And any new markets you in right now? Have you expanded a little bit?
We have added Toledo and Flint, Michigan. So that is exciting. Lots of things going on in the Midwest, manufacturing. So they're going to be coming on board. And, you know, it's interesting because TV kind of operates still in these yearly budget cycles. So January through March tends to be when a lot of activity happens. So I'll keep you posted on that.
That's awesome. This has been our friend, our number one, our number one smiler, and always up early doing her thing. Jenny King, the Kaching Report, Lila Max Media. You're awesome. Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Todd.
Our friend Jane King from Lila Max Media, and this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And you make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. We've now put up links where you can get the book and some of the other stuff. So make sure you go check it out. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
Margie said, Roy.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time. It's time for my main guy, my number one analyst, my guy who knows it all sometimes, but my friend, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Todd, I appreciate you saying sometimes, because none of us know it all, and the key point about it is when we're wrong, making sure we limit our losses, right?
Hey, listen, that's the whole game, you know? We know you can't always be right, but, you know, it always comes down to risk control, which... I don't think that our Federal Reserve has learned risk control. I think they've learned manipulation, but not risk control. But I know, as always, you and I debate back and forth about the Federal Reserve and what's going on. And let me tell you my views, and then I'll let you talk about what you think, what your views are. But I find it very disturbing that, once again, another week goes by, another week we have to hear from a bunch of Fed governors or whatever the hell they're called. And we've got one saying we should not raise rates. We got one saying we need negative rates. And we've got another one saying, well, no, we got to raise rates. And quite frankly, in my opinion, they don't have a freaking clue of what's going on. And they have no idea, other than if the stock market goes down, they got to start talking rates down. And if stock market goes up, they go, well, maybe we should raise rates. And I think that in itself is a not a criminal offense, but in my opinion, it's almost like a criminal offense. What's your take?
Well, that's unfortunately very true, and I just rope in one thing I was a bit surprised about by reading Ben Bernanke's book, and how often they would make statements or moves in the market and then see how the market reacted, i.e. the stock market, to see how the market, you know, was confirming or denying or how they felt about their stock, their moves. So I remember one time, a lot of times, you know, when he pointed out what they did in 2008 and 9, they created some extra liquidity and the market was up 500 points. So yeah, the market responded positively. That's good. And I think that's just the wrong way to look at it, because the stock market will move day in and day out, and it has a tendency to make a lot of us lose our hair, which would be probably better for me to say if we were on TV, because I don't have much of that left.
So when you look at it now, I want to know, Mike, what happened to free markets, price discovery, and actual markets dictating what should be going on, not individuals sitting in a room waiting for the white smoke to come out of the chimney?
Well, I guess it's an extension of this, what we used to call the Greenspan put, where anytime the stock market went down, the Greenspan started that trend, certainly in 1987 when it crashed, to provide liquidity, which is the right thing to do. But at some point, that will evolve, unintended consequences will kick in. So let's look at what's happening right now. The data in the U.S. has turned negative. That's pretty clear. Now, we've been pointing that out for months, but finally the market's figuring it out. And so what's happened recently in the stock market is, well, this is good. Bad news is good news, because the Fed's not going to be tightening. All this tightening is priced in, the market's going to ease. So that's, to me, a very unfortunate situation in the market. My fear is at some point that's got to end. It just can't be that easy to make money, that every time something goes wrong in the market, the Fed's going to ease and make it go up. And at some point, then it has to end. And that's one of my big takeaways I've had from reading his book. And that is, what really happened in 2008 was just the market responded to the housing market that first went up too much and then basically mean reverted. That's all it really did. It went back on trend, but it went up too fast between 2003 and 2005. And what I take away from that is I've done a little analysis on the housing market since 1987 and the stock market since 1987. We can see a situation now that really scares me, is you can see a situation where the stock market has gone up too far, too fast, for potentially the wrong reasons, and the biggest fear I see going forward is it just mean reverts, which means it goes down back to where the trend was, which means, okay, this goes back to maybe 1600 and the S&P 500. The world will say that's horrible, but if you look at any type of trend analysis, that's kind of where it belongs, based on an out trend since the crash of 87.
But don't you really believe that markets, because let me rephrase the question. Market should decide whether interest rates should be higher or lower, whether the stock should be higher or lower. I mean, aren't we, or we used to be, a free market society? We used to be filled with capitalism and the ability, America, the land of opportunity. You could come here with nothing and be a billionaire. But now, those opportunities, in my eyes, with what I'm seeing, are drying up very quickly, because it is no longer a true price discovery market. It's now become a Fed-driven market on manipulating currencies. It's not just our Fed. It's the central banks around the world that continue to manipulate their currency to create benefit or perceived benefit for their own economies. And I think at the end of the day, that creates a disaster and will create eventually a much steeper decline and much more economic trouble down the road. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I agree with you, and that's where I'm a big fan of Jim Rickards, who wrote The Currency Wars and The Death of Money and stuff like that. And I had him as a keynote speaker at our Precious Metals Conference last year. When I introduced him, I said, thank you, Jim, I really appreciate you educating us, and I really hope you're wrong. And that's where I look at it as investors, where he's pointing out really what's happening is we have a global deflationary environment, and central banks are basically doing what they think they're supposed to do to fight that. Now, printing money, I think, is a bit excessive. At least in the United States, we stopped doing that, with QE. But at some point, we both, I used to say that I think the Fed was dreaming of this environment where inflation is picking up and they have to raise rates like the old days when you and I were in the trading pits. But that, to me, is where, am I just dreaming now that we're going to go back some of the old days where we can have the market seek its own value? And I have to think of it as an investor, and what's the best we can do for our listeners and for any people I give advice for research? What's the best thing we can do to make sure, bottom line, sorry, I'm a capitalist, we need to make money. And what's the best way to make money in this environment is to try to work through these nuances. And that's why I have to say, bottom line, I have to stick with everything I see is we've had a tremendous artificially pumped up run in the equity market to some extent. So we're supposed to be underweight equities. We still see deflationary trends in the backward looking measures and in the forward looking measures. If there's one key place to look at, it's the bond market. Yields continue to decline. So I keep saying, fine, you should be overweight bonds, cash. And then I see this massive relative value developing in things like precious metals, where the global demand is picking up exponentially, and we see currency wars, meaning every currency, every country virtually now, except the U.S., is fighting to, you know, lower rates and devalue their currency. And that's where I think the one final pin for the precious metals to do well is really what's been happening is taking away the Fed tightening and potentially going to Fed ease. And that's where I see a lot of value, relative value, in precious metals, and especially because the last 2 years they've been completely out of favor. And that's one thing I've certainly learned the last two, three years is to fade the consensus. And the consensus has been, oh, you got to buy equities and forget about precious metals. Well, at some point, I think we're shifting where we're supposed to be protecting ourselves with some of those valued assets, like relative, really repressed assets.
Now, what is your take, Mike McClone from ETF Securities, on negative rates? The talk of now going to negative rates. What is your thoughts?
Well, that's one thing I just read yesterday. I was riding home on the train that Germany just issued 5-year notes at negative yield. And I don't know how much to make of that other than it's reflecting exactly what's happening in the economy. Inflation measures in Europe and Germany are zero to negative. So that's the same thing it is here. The thing is there, they have the ECB buying bonds, and at least they're trying to, you know, make people move their money out to more risky assets and support the economy. So I'm very fearful of that, but my biggest fear is that trend is happening in a lot of other places in the world, and to think it's not going to happen here, as we point out, this downward trend in retail sales and this downward trend inflation figures. My biggest thing is not so much what it means is what to do about it potentially happening. When people tell me it's not going to happen here, and I have to keep saying, fine, thank you. You told me not to buy bonds in 2013. I bought TLT, which was the main bond ETF, and it was up 30%. So each time they say, I just look at for ways to find opportunities in these environments. And negative rates in Europe mean it's more likely, and negative, lower rates, the more likely that might kind of come over this way. It means what can we do as investors about to potentially take advantage of it? I think it still makes the U.S. bond market look very attractive.
I don't disagree with you at all. And my real problem is, again, it goes back to, and sadly, it goes back to the non-free market society where, we're trading, we're investing in a market that is totally manipulated, where the true measure of price discovery, the true way that markets are supposed to function, are not happening anymore. And to me, it's very sad. Because I look at the numbers and they keep saying there's no inflation, but when you go to the grocery store, there's actually double inflation right now because the cost of goods and services, which we don't count because use them every day, so why would you want to count those, are more expensive, and the average income is lower. So not only are you paying more for that box of cereal when you go to the store, but you're making less, so it makes it like it's even more expensive. We're going to come back from the break and talk more about this, but I'm with my friend, my man, and one of the smartest guys I know, but ETF Securities. And I have to tell you that their products are by far the best in this space, the ETF space, and they are specialists, especially in the metals. They have others, but especially in gold and silver, and they have the one basket of ETFs, Glitter it's called. You got to check it out. Go to their website because this is a space that I'm a big believer on. If you've been listening for quite a while, you know that I've been saying it's time to buy gold and it's trying to buy silver and it's time to be involved because you will find things happening. And of course, that is happening. But we're going to come back after the break and talk more with this about Mike because he's been on top of this the entire time as well. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with my friend, my man, my main analyst, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, again with my friend, my man, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. By far, again, I tell you, the best. I love their products, and I just think they're great because they understand the commodity space, which most don't. But, Mr. McClone, so you and I have been on the bandwagon for, I think, since you've been coming on, and, you got to look at gold, and you got to look at silver, and, of course, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as you and I kind of predicted, gold would one day just start going up and take off. And now, listen, it's not going to the moon, but, you know, it came down, you know, a number of months ago to the 1080, 1070 level, popped up, and we said, you know what, keep an eye on 1100. And then, well, keep an eye on 1140. And now, all of a sudden, gold is back near $1,200 an ounce. And, again, neither one of us predict that it's going to the moon tomorrow. But we felt that it was a great spot of something you should have in your portfolio. And it looks really good. What are your thoughts, and how are you looking at it right now?
Very similar, and my bottom line is I hope it doesn't go to the moon tomorrow, but I fear it might. Because let's look at what it means if the precious metals really blast up. It generally means there's an issue with the currency. So bottom line, I look at, let's look at the last 12 months. If we look at the price of gold since the end of last October 2014, it's up 1%. The S&P 500 is down 1%. But in terms of the euro, gold's up 11%. In the yen, it's up 6%. In virtually every other currency, it's up a lot. So gold is basically a static commodity. It's really the currencies that matter. And overall, the way I see it is when you have a market that's going down, the overall commodity market in terms of the Bloomberg Commodity Index has been down 5 years in a row. Number one, what does that mean with global deflation, the worst since the Great Depression? And number two is, then you look for as an investor, well, what are the ones that are doing well and why? Well, one of the best performers has been gold and silver. So my keep thinking is you have to invest in these, not so much, I think we're supposed to continue to overweight in these type of diversifier assets, partly because of the value and because of the potential protection they provide. They're just key diversifier assets. And if I lose some money in gold or silver because the stock market continues up and my house continues to go up in value, that's fine. But if we get what I think is going to happen, which is more of a relative value mean reversion, then you're going to be really happy you have some of these precious metals. Now, what I see is what you mentioned is you're always going to see speed bumps, and that's one thing you have to be very careful with. Oh, the people say there's a resistance at 1,200. Oh, we're at the 200-day moving average. But one thing you and I did on this, and we think you have to do, is you have to sometimes ignore the technicals and focus on the fundamentals. And sometimes the best signals are when the technicals are completely against you, because that's when the time is you have to say, okay, thank you, I'll buy a little more, and that's what we did. And now that it's starting to perk up and everybody's starting to join the game, I'm a little bit concerned, but you have to expect speed bumps. I think 1,200 in gold is a speed bump. I think it should just, and for the shorter term, retest the high for the year. Why? Because that hurts the most people. Everybody gets so bearish in July when it got below 1,100. Let's get them all bullish up at 1,300. And, you know, I expect that to happen, but the key bottom line for everything is going to be, I think, is how the Fed's going to react, and it's going to really come down to the U.S. stock market. If the U.S. stock market keeps going up, unfortunately, the Fed's going to tighten. That might be bad for gold, but in the short term, it could create a big crash. But if the stock market does what it did, continues to plunge or go down and do what earnings predict it might do, then, you know, the virtually every other market, diversified assets like gold and silver and bond markets, should do much better, and it should take the Fed out of the picture.
Well, let's hope so. Now, I have two questions here, and the first one is just a short answer. Do you think, I guess not a short answer, but what is your opinion of fiat currencies? Because you have just spent a few minutes speaking about gold being priced based on the currency. What is your opinion of fiat currencies? Do you think that's the correct way to be, or should we have a backed currency?
I think we need, as investors, we need to have a backup. And this is part of what I've been really into since I joined this firm. Part of the reason I joined this firm, I was very fearful of this global trend, certainly in this country where no currencies are backed up except for full faith and credit. Obviously, I have complete full faith and credit in U.S. government. As long as I can use that currency to pay my taxes, we're good. But if you look at the value of the U.S. dollar versus any other most other global currencies over the last 30 years, it continues to decline. And we all know we have this substantial issue with debt in this country. And the best way, bottom line, to get out of that situation is to debase the currency. Otherwise, we're certainly not paying it off. And one thing I fear is when you talk about fiat currency, you have to talk about your global debt. And, you know, obviously the U.S. has the benefit of being the world's reserve currency. But we do have our debt to GDP right now is over 100%. The key thing to remember is the last time the Fed started over 100% of debt to GDP. The last time the Fed started a tightening cycle, which was 2004 June, our debt to GDP was 60%. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. So people will say, sometimes you'll hear these people on the press say, oh, the debt declined. It just didn't go up as much as it did the year before, but it's still going up. We're still creating more debt at a much greater pace than our GDP, and that to me is the biggest fear and risk, and part of the reason you have to have, I think we're supposed to have some protection and some solid value assets like gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, which, by the way, are classified as currencies, which really makes them much different than most other commodities.
All right, and I'm, again, look at it. I believe in those just for the hard asset value. I'm not a believer of the actual currency, you know, or that it's a fear trade, but I do believe in them as hard assets, and I do believe that they will appreciate in value like most hard assets do. So that is from where I stand in this. So I look around and I see, you know, kind of what we talked about, and silver, although moving up nicely, the disparity or the multiplier, the difference between gold and silver is still fairly significant, and I look for silver to continue to work higher. What do you think?
Oh, agreed. No, it's, you're mentioning like the gold-silver ratio. It's something I think it's a great way to really, a potential good preliminary indicator of global economic growth. Now, gold divided by silver reached, during the crisis of 2008-09, it got as high as about 80. Right now, it's about 73, and recently it was around 77, so it's very elevated. And if you look at it historically, you know, the average is really closer to 40. So that's another reason people like you and I really prefer silver. And it's still very attractive, but there's two things there. First, it says the gold-silver ratio being elevated at 73 or so, it's coming back. It makes silver look very attractive, but it's also a very good indicator of global economic growth, i.e., gold is the traditional store of value protection asset, and silver is much more industrial. But that's the cool thing about silver that both you and I like. If you look at it 10 years ago, 40% or so was, maybe 45% was industrial demand. 55% is industrial demand now. And global inventories of silver continue to decline. I mean, they're almost near the lowest they've been in 20 years because governments don't really hold it anymore. And yet, you don't really use silver just for jewelry and silverware as much anymore, but virtually every electronic device in the world has silver, partly because it's the best conductor of electricity. So I look at silver as super attractive going forward, and you look at technology. One thing that's really happening in the technology world is it's creating supply and energy, like you can invest in that commodity. It's reducing demand, but it's creating demand in precious metals, notably silver. This technology revolution we're all part of, and if you don't believe me, just pick up your cell phone. Did you have most people who didn't have these things 10, 15 years ago.
No, I agree with you. So as we look forward, you know, I have one question. We don't have a lot of time left. And is there anything in the works, Mike, on ETFs in other spaces like a grains ETF? Is there anything like that going on in the world that you know about, right?
Grains ETFs? You mean like the grains?
Yeah.
They exist. I know there's the corn ETF.
But none of them exist the way that they're supposed to exist. For example, the way that you handle them, the way that ETF Securities handles them, which is to be able to account for the contango and backwardation.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem. It's almost, you know, after running the commodity investment business at S&P, I learned there's just no free lunch. You just can't get away from that. Unless you have the storage space, there's going to be issues with, you know, you try with contango and backwardation with any commodity that takes, that's a bulk commodity that is called storage. For instance, look at crude oil, expensive to store, and that's where the precious metals are very attractive, like palladium. You can store palladium for virtually nothing on your body, yet 80% of demand for palladium is for industrial purposes. That's where precious metals are very attractive, and they're the only ones you can really use physically backed in an ETF.
Mike McClone, you are the man, and again, fortunately, I didn't have to rip you about Ben Bernanke. He should be on the perp walk going to jail, not the ones he's talking about. But Mike, always great to have you on the show. It's your insight is refreshing and honest and straight, and I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
This has been my friend Mike McClone, ETF Securities, and again, I'm telling everybody, I'm urging you for your own good. If you want to be involved in the space, and I believe that everybody should have some holding in the precious metal space, and you can get with ETF Securities, you can get actually their glitter, which is all of the precious metals locked into one little basket, and you get a square deal. Everything is perfect. It's priced properly. It accounts for everything properly. So check out ETF Securities, my friend Mike McClone. This has been The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you tomorrow. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.